This tower, engineer, is our seat of government. We rule more than 1,000 people here. Could we raise a better palace than this tower? We have blocked off the upper stories so that the sections we use will retain heat. Once we defended the tower by dropping rubble from the upper floors. I remember that our worst problem was the fear of high places. Yet we long for the return of the days of wonder when our city held 1,000,000 people and buildings floated in the air. We hope that you will choose to bring back those days. It is said that in the days of wonder, even this very world was bent to its present shape. Perhaps you will deign to say if it is true.
It's true enough, said Louis.
And shall those days return?
Louis made an answer he hoped was noncommittal. He sensed the other's disappointment, or guessed it. Reading the hairy man's expression was not easy. Gestures are a kind of code, and the spokesman's gestures were not those of any terrestrial culture. Tightly curled platinum hair hid his entire face, except for the eyes, which were brown and soft. But eyes hold little expression, contrary to public opinion. His voice was almost a chant, almost a recital of poetry. The autopilot was translating Louis's words into a similar chant, though it spoke to Louis in a conversational tone. Louis could hear the other translator discs whistling softly in puppeteer, snarling quietly in the hero's tongue. Louis put questions.
No, engineer, we are not a bloodthirsty people. We make war rarely. The skulls? They lie underfoot, wherever one walks in Zignamu Click-Click. They have been there since the fall of the city, it is said. We use them for decoration and for their symbolic significance.
The spokesman solemnly raised his hand with its back to Louis, presenting the bird tattoo. And everyone in sight shouted. The word was not translated. It was the first time anyone but the spokesman had said anything at all. Louis had missed something, and he knew it. Unfortunately, there wasn't time to worry about it.
Show us a wonder, the spokesman was saying. We doubt not your power, but you may not pass this way again. We would have a memory to pass to our children.
Louis considered. They'd already flown like birds. That trick would not impress twice. What about manna from the kitchen slots? But even earthborn humans varied in their tolerance of certain food. The difference between food and garbage was mostly cultural. Some ate locusts with honey, others broiled snails. One man's cheese was another's rotted milk. Best not chance it. What about the flashlight laser? As Louis reached into his cycle's cargo kit, the first edge of a shadow square touched the rim of the sun. Darkness would make his demonstration all the more impressive. With aperture wide and power low, he turned the light first on the spokesman, then on his four co-rulers, last on the faces of the crowd. If they were impressed, they hid it well. Hiding his disappointment, Louis aimed the implement high. The figurine, which was his target, jutted from the tower's roof. It was like a modernized, surrealistic gargoyle. Louis's thumb moved, and the gargoyle glowed yellow-white. His index finger shifted, and the beam narrowed to a pencil of green light. The gargoyle sprouted a white-hot navel. Louis waited for the applause.
"You fight with light," said the man with the tattooed hand. "Surely this is forbidden."
The crowd shouted again and was as suddenly silent. "We did not know it," said Louis. "We apologize."
"Did not know it? How could you not know it? Did you not raise the arch in sign of the covenant with man?"
"What arch is that?" The hairy man's face was hidden, but his astonishment was evident.
"The arch over the world, O builder!"
Louis understood then. He started to laugh. The hairy man punched him unskillfully in the nose. The blow was light, for the hairy man was slight and his hands were fragile. But it hurt. Louis was not used to pain. Most people of his century had never felt pain more severe than that of a stubbed toe. Anesthetics were too prevalent. Medical help was too easily available. The pain of a skier's broken leg usually lasted seconds, not minutes, and the memory was often suppressed as an intolerable trauma. Knowledge of the fighting disciplines, karate, judo, jiu-jitsu, and boxing, had been illegal since long before Louis Wu was born. Louis Wu was a lousy warrior. He could face death, but not pain. The blow hurt. Louis screamed and dropped his flashlight laser. The audience converged. 200 infuriated hairy men became 1,000 demons, and things weren't nearly as funny as they had been a minute ago. The reed-thin spokesman had wrapped both arms around Louis Wu, pinioning him with hysterical strength. Louis, equally hysterical, broke free with one frantic lunge. He was on his cycle, his hand was on the lift lever, when reason prevailed. The other cycles were slave to his. If he took off, they would take off, with or without their passengers. Louis looked about him. Teela Brown was already in the air. From overhead, she watched the fight, her eyebrows puckered in concern. She had not thought of trying to help. Speaker was in furious motion. He'd already felled half a dozen enemies. As Louis watched, the Kazin swung his flashlight laser and smashed a man's skull. The hairy men milled about him in an indecisive circle. Long-fingered hands were trying to pull Louis from his seat. They were winning, though Louis gripped the saddle with hands and knees. Belatedly, he thought to switch on the sonic fold. The natives shrieked as they were snatched away. Someone was still on Louis's back. Louis pulled him away, let him drop, flipped the sonic fold off and then on again to eject him. He scanned the X parking lot for Nessus. Nessus was trying to reach his cycle. The natives seemed to fear his alien shape. Only one blocked his way, but that one was armed with a metal rod from some old machine. As Louis located them, the man swung the rod at the puppeteer's head. Nessus snatched his head back. He spun on his forelegs, putting his back to danger but facing away from his fly cycle. The puppeteer's own flight reflex had killed him, unless Speaker or Louis could help him in time. Louis opened his mouth to shout, and the puppeteer completed his motion. Louis closed his mouth. The puppeteer turned to his cycle. Nobody tried to stop him. His hind hoof left bloody footprints across the hard-packed dirt. Speaker's circle of admirers were still out of his reach. The Kazin spat at their feet, not a Kazinti gesture but a human one, turned and mounted his cycle. His flashlight laser was gory up to the elbow of his left hand. The native who had tried to stop Nessus lay where he had fallen. Blood pooled lavishly about him. The others were in the air. Louis took off after them. From afar, he saw what Speaker was doing, and he called, "Hold it! That's not necessary!" Speaker had drawn the modified digging tool. He said, "Does it have to be necessary?" But he had stayed his hand. "Don't do it," Louis implored him. "It'd be murder. How can they hurt us now? Throw rocks at us?"
"They may use your flashlight laser against us."
"They can't use it at all. There's a taboo."
"So said the spokesman. Do you believe him?"
"Yeah." Speaker put his weapon away. Louis sighed in relief. He'd expected the Kazin to level the city.
"How would such a taboo evolve? A war of energy weapons?"
"Or a bandit armed with the Ringworld's last laser cannon. Too bad there's nobody to ask."
"Your nose is bleeding."
Now that he came to think about it, Louis's nose stung painfully. He slaved his cycle to Speaker's and set about making medical repairs. Below, a churning, baffled lynch mob swarmed at the outskirts of Zignamuklikklik. Chapter 13. Starseed Lure.
"They should have been kneeling," Louis complained. "That's what fooled me. And the translation kept saying Builder when it should have been saying God."
"God?"
"They've made gods of the Ringworld engineers. I should have noticed the silence. Tanjit, nobody but the priest was making a sound. They all acted like they were listening to some old litany. Except that I kept giving the wrong responses."
"A religion? How weird. But you shouldn't have laughed,"
Tila's intercom image said seriously. "Nobody laughs in church, not even tourists."
They flew beneath a fading sliver of noon sun. The Ringworld showed above itself in glowing blue stripes, brighter every minute.
"It seemed funny at the time," said Louis. "It's still funny. They've forgotten they're living on a ring. They think it's an arch."
A rushing sound penetrated the sonic fold. For a moment it was a hurricane, then it cut off sharply. They had crossed the speed of sound. Zignamuklikklik dwindled behind them. The city would never have its vengeance on the demons. Probably it would never see them again.